The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
What is a pocket of lostness? So just out of curiosity, have you heard this phrase? Raise your hand. Wow, most of you have heard of it. I want to talk about, first of all, where it came from. Back in, prior to 2014, somewhere around 2010, the state convention, they had the same intuition that you have, and that is that lostness in North Carolina was growing unusually fast. You heard our speaker this morning talk just a little bit about that. We're certainly seeing it in the Mooresville area. You're probably seeing it in your area. We know that lostness here is growing. What they wanted to find out is, where is it growing and why is it growing? We didn't want to just assume and give simplistic answers to complex situations. So they commissioned a study. Now, if you're interested, I've left my card laying out all over. If you want to know more about this study, email me. I'll send you more details about it. They commissioned a guy by the name of Kurt Wattke, and he has a PhD in statistics and big data analysis. He's a brother in Christ. I think he's a fellow Southern Baptist, lives in North Savannah. And so they asked him, could you crunch all of the data you think necessary and tell us where lostness is growing in North Carolina, where it's growing the fastest, and give us some preliminary indication on why it's growing so fast in those areas. So Kurt took the time, did the study, crunched all of the data, and he came back with the substance of what you're going to be seeing today, and that's what I'm going to be presenting to you. What we've found is that lostness in North Carolina is indeed growing fast. It's growing unusually fast in certain locations, and more than likely it's a location within just a few miles of where you live if you're not living in one of those locations. We also have begun to discover what's driving this growth. By understanding that, then, we've got a better idea of how to go after it a little more strategically. So my name is Chris Alley. I am the leader of I'm team leader for the strategic focus team. Following this report, the state convention said, all right, let's bring a team of guys on that can begin to focus on this issue and lead our convention and our churches to just zero in on these geographic areas where lostness is growing unusually fast. We have come to call those places pockets of lostness. So let me see if I can get this presentation going. I hope it's not going to be an interruption the whole time trying to do this. What is a pocket of lostness? Do you have your Bibles? Somebody turn to John 4:35. Now, while you're turning there, John 4:35, let me remind you of this story. I want to just set the setting for this story. You remember Jesus and his disciples are walking through Samaria, probably a hot day. It's somewhere around noon. And Jesus walks over to this well in Samaria, and he meets there the woman at the well. You remember that. And they have this conversation. It is a fantastic conversation of taking somebody from where they are to where they need to be in order to understand the gospel. Now, Jesus' disciples come back, and what the Bible says, they were what? Surprised, right? They were surprised to see that Jesus was doing what? Talking to a woman at the well at noon. More than likely, she was a woman of pretty bad reputation. Not somebody you want to be having a conversation with if you're a rabbi from Israel. So the disciples are looking around. They're kind of puzzled at what Jesus is doing here. And he ends his talk. He's got this lesson for his disciples now, and he wraps it up in this statement. Somebody read John 4:35 to us.
Don't you have a saying? It's still 4 months until harvest. I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest.
Right. He says, lift up your eyes and look under the fields because they are ripe for harvest. Brothers and sisters, that's what I want to do today. I want to help us lift our eyes and look at these fields. I'm telling you what we're finding. They might not be easy fields, but they are ripe for harvest. And sometimes they're hiding right in plain sight. Folks, this thing did not do this at all. Let me try one more thing and see if I can get it to stay. I tried this out earlier and we were doing just fine. Let's see if it'll stay now. Okay. All right. So think of a pocket of lostness as a gospel desert. Over here we've got our city, we've got a little water supply, we've got the mountains, and then over here we've got a desert. So let's look at this in a little detail. All right. Sometimes, and this your guide should follow along with this, sometimes in desert or water shortage situations, my goodness, sometimes you have more people than you have water. Let's see if we can go back to this one. Okay? Sometimes more people than water. Please stay on. Is it tracking? Do we have it?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I live in Raleigh. Our news station in Raleigh, WRAL, and guys, I'm going to be clicking back and forth to see if I can keep this thing active right here. WRAL reports that by the year 2040, Raleigh will have more demand for water than it has supply. Now, that's where I live. That is not very encouraging to me. Do you hear that? By 2040, they'll have more demand for water than they have supply. Now, I read a report in the Huffington Post that says Los Angeles is actually a lot worse off than Raleigh, North Carolina. Listen to this. According to the Huffington Post, by 2060, the demand for water in LA will be 5 times its supply. Okay? So, practically speaking, when you have more people than you have water, particularly in our cities, you have a desert. Okay? These are the things that create deserts. Now, we're going to come back around and apply this. Now, sometimes things get in the way of the water here. Now, go back to fifth grade with me if you can. For some of us, that's a little further than others. But go back to fifth grade and remember the first study you ever did on climate, and you were talking about deserts. So let's say that the weather patterns move left to right here, okay? So on this side, let's say you've got an ocean over here. You got this nice water supply here. When that weather moves across the mountain, right here, where does the water fall? On the left side or the right side? It falls on the left side. Right here, that mountain is going to squeeze all of the water out, and you get this beautiful water source over here, and that barrier...
Well, it's gone.
Yeah, I know. It's gone. Yeah, I'm going to have to send this one to you by email, right? So, my goodness, this thing was not doing this at all earlier. They came by and they said, "Do you need anything?" I do. Oh, my goodness. Okay, we're going to walk through it this way and see how long this lasts, okay? On this side, then, you end up with a desert. Sometimes you have things that get in the way of the water. Well, let's look at the next frame, okay? Sometimes you have a long way to walk to get to the water. If you live over here, first of all, you're nuts. But if you live over here, look at how far you got to go to get to the water. Sometimes there's a long distance. Now, imagine somebody dying of thirst in this desert right here. Should we really expect someone dying of thirst in the desert to cross this desert, climb the mountains, and then search throughout this densely populated city in order to find water? Do we expect that? Listen, just a little about water in deserts. This is unbelievable. Okay? People don't live in deserts. People die in deserts. Deserts don't have water. So how does this apply then to gospel deserts? Let's see.
Is it your cable?
It's possible. Yeah, and I don't know how to fix that right now because I've got an HDMI here with no VGA connection. Okay. Check it back here. That one's tight. That one's tight. That one's tight. Good suggestion. Okay. Sometimes things get in the way of the water. Let's see if we can keep going. Sometimes you need to walk a long way to get to the water. Here's what we're learning. Here's what we know about deserts. Population, barriers and distance practically create water deserts, because you end up with these water shortages. Now, here's what we're learning about pockets of lostness: population, barriers, or distance can create gospel deserts. Now, let's take that idea and let's go back and apply it to what we're seeing in North Carolina. Sometimes, especially around our cities, but not exclusively our cities, we're seeing this in other areas too. Sometimes the population grows faster than the church. I want you to be thinking about your area or the cities close by your area. I live in Raleigh-Durham. We have a little place outside Raleigh-Durham called Apex. Apex grew in the last 10 years. I had to check the number there. In the last 10 years, Apex grew by 10%. Does anybody want to guess how fast the church grew in Apex in that same 10 years? Great guess. It was 2%. Now, actually, we do have places of negative growth. We sure do. It grew by 2%. Now, do your math there, right? So the population is growing five times faster than the evangelical church. Okay, let me give you another one. All right. Cary, which is just down the road from Apex, and it's where the Baptist building is. It's where the state convention houses their office. Okay, this doesn't bode too well for us, right? Okay, think about this. Their population grew 15% in 10 years. Do you want to guess at how fast the church grew during that time? 2%. You see what's happening? The population in Cary is growing 7.5% faster than the evangelical population in Cary. All right, Wake Forest. Any of you attend Southeastern Seminary? Okay, you've been to Southeastern, or you know someone who did? Okay, that's where Southeastern Seminary is. A beautiful little community up there. Now, that area grew. The population grew. Let's do the evangelical population, because the church population there actually grew 2.6%. They're actually doing a little bit better. Now, the seminary also grew during that time, because it's up around 3,600 students right now. They dumped a lot of people into churches up there. Okay, so there was growth. You might be able to account for a little bit of that from the seminary. But listen, the population of Wake Forest during that same period grew 125%. Now, I'm going to tell you, that number is not unusual. We've got numbers in North Carolina that are approaching 400%. They're growing dramatically fast. Here's the point. The point is that we get gospel deserts when the population is growing faster than the church. And we're seeing that all across North Carolina. Now, I think I finally learned how to at least get the first screen up for you, okay? Let's do this. There it is. Okay, sometimes the population changes faster than the church. Now, we're going to list some barriers here, because these changes create barriers. I went to elementary school in Chester, South Carolina. I don't know if any of it, yeah, yay, Chester. Typically, in about, I'll do 10 presentations and I'll meet one person from Chester, or that at least knows of it. Now, when I was growing up in Chester, South Carolina, probably like when you were growing up, wherever you grew up, people of different faiths were the Methodists and the Presbyterians, right? I mean, Chester, South Carolina, we didn't even have Catholics. And that was just foreign to anyone in Chester, South Carolina. Think about the people that your children and grandchildren go to school with today. They're going to school with Muslims and Buddhists and Sikhs and Hindus and Wiccans and New Age and atheist and agnostic. You see, the population in North Carolina is changing rapidly. Now, I'm not disparaging our international neighbors at all. Folks, this is a grand opportunity. We have been trying for years to get to the peoples of this world. That's all right. I thought that was me. That's not a problem. And now we've got these people coming to us, living in our communities, buying homes in our neighborhoods. I'm telling you, it is a beautiful, God-orchestrated opportunity to reach the nations of the world, but it creates tremendous barriers. Listen, it was one thing for... I lived in Chester, South Carolina. In fact, I'm going to come back to that example in just a minute. Did you know that in North Carolina today, there are more than 300 languages spoken in the homes of our school children?
I believe it.
300 languages. So the point is this diversity here, the picture that you just saw on your screen. They're recording this, by the way. Catherine's going to get a kick out of all of this broken speech here. But think about the barriers that we face today. Poverty. But North Carolina Baptists are not doing a good job at all at reaching people in poverty. Do you know one of the reasons? They can't afford our programs. They can't go to Caswell. They can't eat Chick-fil-A afterwards. They're not going out for ice cream. Most of them can't even get there. That's not their problem. It's our opportunity, but it creates a barrier. What about wealth? And you'll have some people in your church, and God bless them. They grew up middle class or poor, and God has blessed them, and they have money, but they still think middle class. They got a lot of money, but they think middle class. Wealth, I'm talking about people that have had money for generations. Generational wealth. You know what? They typically don't come to our churches. They don't come. They move in different circles than we move. Have you heard about a group of people in the United States called the Nuns? N-O-N-E-S, the Nuns. Have you heard of that group? This is the group, it is the fastest growing religious group in the United States. James Emery White out of Charlotte wrote a great book on reaching the nuns. If you're interested, grab it, read it. It's a really good read. But James Emery White is the author, and I think it's called Reaching the Nuns. I think that's the name of it. But this is a group of people here that grew up in church. They went to Bible school with me. But they went to university, they became very skeptical, they looked at a lot of hypocritical Christianity, and they decided, I don't need any of that. So now, on the U.S. Census, they don't mark Christian anymore, they don't mark Catholic, they mark none. I'm not any. I've become none. They are the dis-churched. It is the fastest growing religious group in America. I got to watch my time, but I do want to say one thing about this group. If you want to do some academic reading, now this will be challenging reading, but this is some of the best writing on reaching Western culture that you'll find. All right, the name of the book is Foolishness to the Greeks. Foolishness to the Greeks, written by a missionary. He was a missionary to India 41 years, and then he moved back to London. And when he moved back to London, he could not believe how much London had changed. And here's the statement he makes in that book. He says that in the West, those people, once having embraced Christianity, and he's speaking of England, have now rejected it. You follow me?
Yep.
They once had embraced it, and now they've rejected it. Now, here's the chilling statement. Making the West the most difficult mission field in the world. I'm going to tell you, it was easier when we lived in China to talk to Muslims about Jesus than it is living in Raleigh, North Carolina. Because I run across people that go, I've been there, done that. I'm exploring other areas now. This is a very these are barriers. And these barriers create big challenges to the gospel. What about the challenges we face with immigrants and refugees and different languages and different religions? Sometimes the population changes faster than the church. All right, let me see if I can get it changed screens here. Work with me, screen. Sometimes the population grows distant from the gospel. Now, this one requires a little bit of explanation. This is actually, I get this from the Engel Scale. You can look it up online. I think Engel put this together maybe the late 60s, early 70s. And here's what he says. He goes, when we sit down to talk with people about the gospel, there are different levels of understanding of the gospel. There are different starting places. Now, here's where the story I was going to tell you when we pastored in West Canton, West Canton Baptist Church. I was there from 92 to 96. It was a wonderful place for first ministry. And I shared the gospel with a lot of people in Canton, North Carolina. Every one of them, without fail, had a basic understanding of God with no misunderstanding. Are you going to come back? Yeah. They had a basic understanding of God with very few misunderstandings. They had many relationships with believers. In fact, when I sat down to talk with somebody about the gospel in Canton, North Carolina, they were usually ready, with a little explanation, they were ready to accept or delay accepting the truth. I could start right here at number 3 in Canton, North Carolina. You following me? Now, I want you to think about most of the gospel presentations that you've learned. Most of them start right here at number 3. People are ready to accept the gospel. They got all of this backstory because they went to Bible school. They'd been to revivals. They grew up in a home where mama read the Bible. They grew up in a home where granny was going to twist your ear if you acted up in church. And you were in church whether you liked it or not, because that's what we do. We go to church, right? Those days are passing quickly away. Now, when our family moved to China, we moved to China in 96. We were trying to reach Muslim Chinese. Do you want to guess at where I had to start? Did I start at number 1? Were they ready to surrender their life to Christ? You want to guess at where I started when we went to China?
9 or 10.
9 or 10. That is exactly right. In fact, our biggest barrier was 9. It was the misunderstandings of the gospel. I remember the first time I shared the gospel, you know, I worked for probably a year and a half just to get to the point where I could share the gospel. And I remember the first time I was kind of going through the 4 spiritual laws and just kind of a rough outline trying to explain it to my friend. And I cannot tell you how many barriers I tripped over or ran into when I was sharing the gospel. So take Bill Bright's tract, beautiful tract that they had, 4 spiritual laws. And it starts off by saying God loves you and He has a what? A wonderful plan for your life. Right now, that's a beautiful statement, especially for college students in the 1970s. Okay? So I would start off with something like this. Now, please understand me. This is not what I said. What I'm about to tell you is not what I said, and it is absolutely not what I meant, but it's all that they could hear. God, who is one, loves you. And when I begin to talk about Jesus, here's what they heard. God loves you so much that He had an illegitimate physical relationship with a 14-year-old virgin woman named Mary and created His son, Jesus, who was so impotent and weak that He could not fight His enemies and He died on a cross. He's got a plan for your life. Now, is that the gospel? No. But those are the misunderstandings. It's the filter. Yeah, so we spent years working through the filter. Praise God, by the way, what God is doing among that Muslim people group today. Because the gospel did. But we see what we had to do? We couldn't start here with people living in a desert. We had to start where they were, in the desert. By the way, we literally lived in a desert. I don't recommend it. Okay? So, here's what we're finding today in North Carolina. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more detail in just a minute, not just about the pocket in general, but the hard-to-reach segments. We're finding inside these pockets, we're finding that those who are unchurched, not the churched, I'm not talking about reaching people out of your neighbor's church or somebody reaching into your church and taking your members over to their church. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who are non-evangelical, unchurched. We are having to start somewhere between 8 and 10. Folks, I'm going to tell you that's one of the biggest reasons we're not reaching them. Have you ever... I love this story. Learned this early in child rearing. This kid comes in, 8 years old, and says, "Dad, where did you come from?" And so Dad breaks out in a sweat, and he goes, "Oh no, here's the talk." 8 years old, I thought I had four more years with this. What in the world am I going to say? So Dad just starts tripping over himself. And he's trying to explain this, and he's trying to explain this. And the further he goes, the kid's face is just contorting and twisting. And finally, the little boy just breaks in, and he goes, "No, Dad, I mean, where did you grow up?" Here's the issue. So many times, they're asking questions we're not answering. And we've got answers to questions they're not asking. And what we've got to do is we've got to pull back and find out where are they. I'm going to tell you this is our biggest barrier. I want you to think through the larger, more successful church movements over the last 30 years. Go back and think through them. I can just highlight three, okay? Saddleback, Hybels Church up in Chicago, and then Keller and what they're doing up in New York City. If you'll go read the backstory to all three of these men, they did one thing in common. They had one thing in common. They started here. They got to know their communities. And they started where their communities were. They took the gospel to them instead of asking people to walk all the way to them with the gospel. Now, my screen is telling me I need to move on. I have gotten too long-winded, and look, it comes up. All right, pockets of lostness form. Pockets of lostness form when there is population density, population diversity, and population distance from the gospel. Any one of those can create a pocket of lostness. Typically, we will find a combination of all three. Typically. Not always. All right, Molly, wake back up here. Let me show you a map here. These are the pockets of lostness in North Carolina. North Carolina has 250 pockets of lostness. More than likely, there's one near you. I want to make a quick statement about these pockets. You may be looking on that map and going, "You know what? We live right here. There are no pockets of lostness near us." That's true, right there. But are there lost people near you? Absolutely. So anything we're talking about here can apply here. But I tell you what, why start here? Why go to these places? And I'll tell you why. We're saying start here. We're not saying do only here. Because when we start in these places, we are going to the most difficult places in North Carolina. If we can do it there, we can do it anywhere. We are learning things here that are going to help the churches as we move out. But we don't want in any way anyone to think that we're saying only do here. We need both and, not either or today. We've got lostness everywhere. All right. A few little characteristics of these pockets. Usually they are 3 to 6 miles in diameter. These are some of the larger ones up here. There is a high percentage of lost people there, typically above 71%. High percentage of lost. There is often a low number of missionally healthy churches. Now, what do I mean by missionally healthy? You can jot a note down on this if you want to. What I mean is mission as God sees it. So this church is forming people in the image of Christ. It's a lot of what our speaker was talking about this morning, okay? Somebody that looks like Jesus, thinks like Jesus, walks like Jesus, talks like Jesus. They look like Jesus. Now, why is this so important? The vast majority of people today that are hard to reach in North Carolina do not care what you think. But they are absolutely fascinated with how you live. I remember a fight broke out in a Chinese church in Taiwan. It's an ugly little fight. The church leaders had been to a conference in America and they'd seen really nice brochures. So they decided that they needed to go back to Taiwan and they needed to make a brochure for their church they could hand out to the neighbors and invite them to church. Not a bad idea, right? Well, you know churches, and this was a Baptist church in Taiwan, so there were, 30 people and 35 opinions here? And they began to, let's say, discuss it during their business meeting. It actually ended up into a church fuss. Not a fight, just a fuss. And tension was growing. The pastor did not see a resolution. He was convinced he needed a brochure. There was a large contingency of people who didn't want to spend the money on it. So the pastor, in his wisdom, God's wisdom, decided they would call a prayer meeting. He said, we're just going to pray about it. Let's see what God says. So they prayed. And when they were done praying, this little lady who had said very little in the whole fuss said, well, I think it is time for me to speak. And she goes, the issue is not a brochure. Do we need one or do we not need one? She said, we are God's brochure. And when we're fussing and fighting, no brochure is going to be able to overcome that. Folks, you see, that's what Jesus is doing with you and me. That's why this walk is so hard sometimes, because He's making each one of us look a little more like Him. And I'm going to tell you, when people, it doesn't matter the barrier or the distance, when they see that, they're like, something's different, and I've got to know what that is. I remember we'd been in China about 4 years, and I was riding the bus home one day, had the family with us. Actually, you don't ride a bus home in China. You stand among, honestly, they could put, you know the size of your bus? 120 people could fit on that bus. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Literally, we're climbing out the back window to get out one day. So we're riding home the bus, and it dawns on me. We're so frustrated. I'm like, God, we just can't get the gospel to these people like we want to, and we try so hard, and we fumble over our words, and they misunderstand, and we're praying our eyeballs out here, and we're doing the best we can. And the Holy Spirit just spoke to me right there and gave me the greatest peace. And He said, Chris, do you see how much they like you? And I was like, yeah, I do. And He said, it's not you they've fallen in love with. It's me. And they just don't know it yet. Give them time. I remember when the first guy gave his life to Christ, 61-year-old man, Muslim man, high standing in that community. And I rushed down there, and I had heard about it through the grapevine. I rushed down and I said, Mr. High, is this true? He goes, oh yeah, it's true. And I said, what convinced you of the truth? We'd talked for a while, I heard his story. And then I asked him this question, what convinced you of the truth of the gospel? He pulled out his Quran. And pages were all worn. He said, all of my life, all of my reading life, I have read this book cover to cover over and over. I have never in all of my life seen one Muslim do what's written in this book. And he put it.
Correct.
Yeah. Now, this is very important. He took that Quran and he put it on the lower shelf. You never do that with the Quran. The Quran is always the highest book in the room. He put it underneath the Bible. And then he pulled the Bible out. He said, I've been reading this book for 4 years. He said, I've known 12 Christians, and every one of them do what's written in this book. His daughter came to Christ. You know why she came to Christ? Because the five ladies that were on our team, going down there at different times, spending thousands of hours with these folks. She said, I became a believer in Jesus because I never once heard any one of you gossip about the other. You see what God's doing in your church? See, He's forming you and me in His image. Why? To make us just unmistakably attractive for these folks right here. So missionally healthy has people that are growing in the image of Christ, and then it has people that are going out on the mission of Christ. We're not asking them to come to us. They're not going to come to us. Why? Because these pockets are filled with people that are not easily attracted to our churches. They're attracted to our people, but they are not attracted to our churches. How many of you went to the mosque this week? Just raise your hand. Nobody? The Hindu temple. Did any of you make it to the Hindu temple? All right, here's less of a stretch. Did any of you make it to Mass last Saturday? Why? Why? Because the thought of that scares you to death. Welcome to their world. They're not coming to your church. They'll come to your house. They'll sit and share a meal with you. But you see, these pockets look like this. They don't look like Chester, South Carolina. when I was growing up there. Well, let's see, is it going to behave? Here's a question I think we need to ask. Okay, while we're still on the screen. Here's the question. Are we going to require the people who are living in these gospel deserts and dying of thirst to cross these deserts and climb these mountain barriers in order to come to us? That's not what Jesus did. Samaria was a gospel desert. Jesus carried the living water to the woman at the well. In the same way that Christ went to her, we have to go to them. Now, I'm going to put up on the screen, I think you've got it on your paper there. The strategy coordinators of the strategic focus team want to help your church take a missionary approach to these pockets of lostness. Now remember, when I say missionary, I mean they want to come in and they want to help your church form people in the image of Jesus. That's the most attractive advertisement we have. And then they want to help walk you out into these hard-to-reach places. Just like Jesus went to Samaria, we want our churches going to them. Now, we've got a good 15 minutes, and I could let you out a little bit early, get down in line in front. But let's take a few questions. This always generates questions. Yes?
So the last one says the next 150. What is it?
Yes, great question. Let me see if I can go back to this frame right here. This one here. Okay, most of the pockets, you can't really tell from this map, but the top 100 all cluster around our major cities, like Asheville, Hickory, Gastonia area right here. You can particularly see it in the Triangle, the Triad, and Charlotte, okay, right here. That's the top 100. The next 150, though, are scattered in more of our rural areas, like this. And so if you're living near one of those areas, you want to talk with Mark Redding about that. Boone is kind of in that no man's land up there. You're not really in a population center called Asheville. And by the way, there are some exciting things going on in the Boone area. And Mark is working with that up there.
I actually know a pastor up there that has that wonderful church and doesn't just work with the campus.
Uh-huh.
He also, Josh Hyde.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
He's evangelist, honey.
Yeah, and
he's
we need him.
Wow. He was not supposed to be on this earth.
Wow.
He was supposed to have been aborted, but look what God did with him.
Wow. Powerful.
But you know, it's amazing. And I can see my town right up there.
Mm-hmm. And where are you from? I didn't ask earlier.
I'm from Rockingham.
Okay, yeah.
So we have an overflow of military.
Yeah.
Into the area. We also have long history of Hispanics.
Yes.
Now we have what they call Latinos, if they're from California, the Latinos.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then we have an overflow. Well, actually, we have different religions. We have the Kingdom Hall. We have the mosque. There's one mosque in town.
Mm-hmm. I think you've got a growing group of Hindus there, too, if I remember right.
If you've ever worked in retail or you ever go in a grocery store, you can find these people.
Yeah.
And if we do like Kay Arthur says in the book of Ephesians, and get that little opportunity right there, place in our heart with a seal over us.
Yeah.
We can touch those people, and you are so right that if they see you, and that's what I love Ephesians, it's teaching you to walk that talk. Walk the talk. And I love the way Kay Arthur says that if you act like little Jesuses, they will see you.
Absolutely.
And I am testament.
Yeah.
On my job, that is untrue.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we think of our missionaries. The missionaries kind of go to the big places, right? But it's the local church that gets into the nooks and crannies. We need that. And that's exactly what you're talking about, being Christ in a retail place. Well, that ain't easy to do. That's right. Good word. Any other questions? Yes.
Just a thought and a question. Whenever you were talking about the 2% growth,
yeah,
My kind of question with that is, like, just in our area, we do see growth in our church, but it's really people moving there from other, like, other states or whatnot, but they're believers. So we're really just moving from one church bucket to another church bucket.
Yeah, it's a good way to look at
it. Not really reaching our community, the lost in our community. So it'd be interesting to know if that 2% really took that into account. Are those true new believers, or is it...
No. And you got to remember, most of the evangelical growth, like the 2% you saw in Apex Cary, those are areas with high population growth. And a lot of the growth is coming from just what you said. It's people that have moved into the area. I don't know if you guys know the statistic or not, but only 1% of our churches are growing by reaching the lost. 1%. I heard somebody from Southeastern, I'm trying to remember who it was. It was not Alvin Reed. Said the other day that that number has actually sunk below 1% now. Guys, look, here's the bottom line. We're not reaching the lost. We're not even reaching our children. That's a whole nother presentation. Let's just hold that for now. Follow up.
Another question. Mm-hmm. Somebody was telling me, and I looked at the website. There's a website called Mission Insight.
Yes.
And somebody was telling me that you could actually get like names of your neighbors,
can
pray for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to have someone like the state of North Carolina, like, or your church, or somebody has to get a license for that.
No, it's actually a lot easier than that. So two different things that you're talking about here. This is a Mission Insight map. Have you heard of Mission Insight? Probably a number of you have. This is a Mission Insight map generated by that thing. That is free to every North Carolina Baptist church. All you need to do is contact me and we'll get you set up. It's very easy. But you can have access to all the data I'm talking about today. That's one thing. Pray for Every Home is a good... You're familiar with that resource? Pray for Every Home is a good resource for praying for your neighbors. You can go check that out and it's free. Yeah. Now, we can get neighbor names and lists through Mission Insight. It's not free. We have to pay a fee for that, an extra fee for that. You can do it. I'll tell you another thing you can do with Mission Insight. It's just brilliant. If your church is willing, you can load your membership into Mission Insight and it will plot where every member lives. And you overlay that with these pockets of lostness, and where every one of them, almost every one of them, would say, we got people living there already. What if that became a gospel outpost? But yes.
One last question on the map. What's the larger circles there?
Yeah, the larger circles are just the 6 mile. Actually, this one is, you saw it, right?
Yeah.
That one is the largest of them. That one is a 7 mile radius, so it's actually 14 miles across.
Okay.
Yeah. That has to do... that might be. It's a double word right there. That's quite possible that that's Roanoke Rapids. Those are areas that had low evangelical population and low population, so they extended the circle.
Yeah, that's like our area, too.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Yeah, yours has two very big ones up here. Right. Look at these tiny ones here, mile and a half in radius there. So, yeah, other questions. These are great questions, by the way. And if you have others, you want to stay around and talk, I'll be glad to do that. We could take one or two more if you've got more.
So the strategy coordinators, I mean, what are they typically doing to partner with churches?
Great question. You don't have to remember any of this. This is just to kind of give you an idea. We've developed a 5-stage process right now in working one of these areas. So, for example, the coordinator will go into this area right here, okay? And they'll do all the demographic research on it. They'll find out who's there. They'll find out how fast it's growing. What are going to be the harder to reach places. They'll do all of their homework. When I was the Triangle Strategy Coordinator, this whole process would take me about 4 days. I'd spend about 2 days on research, and then I would spend 2 days just driving around in it to see what I saw on paper I want to see with my own eyes. And they'll get in there, they'll prayerfully go through that area, driving it, eating at restaurants, talking to people, confirming what they've read or maybe questioning what they've read. And then what they're going to do is they're going to develop a real simple report. At that point, they're going to work with the director of missions in that area. They're going to work with the director of missions and say, look, here's what I found. Could we pull churches together now and give this presentation and see if God will move on the hearts of pastors and or leaders to begin to go after the lostness in this pocket? Out of that, we develop a team. And then that team begins to look at what are going to be the hardest to reach places. What are the ones that are immediately within our reach we could get started now? And as we discover the difficulties of working at this, we begin to bring in specialists from the state convention, from evangelism, church planting, church revitalization, disciple making, etc. We try to bring them all together to equip the church. Remember, twofold mission. We need to develop people in the image of Jesus. Okay, and then we want to lead them out. So eventually, here's the end of what we're trying to do. We want to see sustainable, multiplying disciple making in every hard to reach segment. Give you an example. Most pockets have five hard to reach segments. There are five, kind of five typical. Okay. The pocket in Cary, North Carolina, we looked at earlier, 23. 23 hard to reach segments right there. They started with five. They're working on five of them right now. That's typically what they do, but that strategy coordinator stays with that team until they get them up on their feet. Once they're moving in a direction, he'll move on and probably start another team, but he'll continue to coach that team right there. Is that what you were asking? The segments, okay. Hard-to-reach segments within a pocket, you'll have segments, okay?
That's cultural groups.
Right, exactly. Nations. Rich, poor, immigrant, refugee.
Variations in all of those.
That's exactly right. African-Americans, one of our toughest to reach right now. We have the least resources and the most need in that area right now. Yeah, great question. Yes?
You may have said this already, but how is the research collected?
Is excellent.
Census?
Oh, gosh. When Kurt did his study, he drew from about a dozen sources. The U.S. Census was one of them. Inspirion was one of them, the marketing group, Lifeway, Barna. There were about a dozen. If you want to know those, shoot me an email and I'll send them to you. We've got those written down. Now, that's how we got these circles. Mm-hmm. Now we go to Mission Insight, because Mission Insight gives us almost up-to-the-minute data. Census data obviously does not change every day, though they're doing yearly projections on it now, which makes it a lot easier to use. But a lot of that data is updated daily. So we're watching these pockets. That's the other crazy thing. These pockets are kind of moving. This is a snapshot of a river. Because North Carolina is changing. But Mission Insight gives us our up-to-the-minute data. When we come and talk to your church, that's what we're going to be using. And you can use it too. In fact, there'll be people in your church that'll use it far better than we will. Yeah. I'm going to turn you loose. Thank you for being here.